This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. I'm glad you tuned in today. I'm on a run with reporters, journalists, editors, people in the press. And on today's show, you're going to get to meet Brian Morrissey. Brian is the senior reporter at Adweek, where he covers the interactive advertising industry, something near and dear to all our hearts. Brian has been in that industry for quite a long time. He's been with, before Adweek, he was with DM News, and then ClickZ before that, and he started out at the Silicon Alley Reporter. I'm sure you all remember it. Prior to working in journalism, he was a speechwriter in D.C., and we're going to learn more about why he got into speechwriting and how he got into the interactive media space. He has some master's degrees, and we're going to talk about one of the unusual things about that. So on today's show, you're going to hear about Simpsonizing yourself. You're going to hear about ad freaks. We're going to talk about potassium and ultramarathons and Belgian beer, acrophobia, something called man-on-man chivalry, abolishing the penny, volunteering, and weird quirks. And they're all about Brian. So... So we've gotten right into interbreeding and dog turds so far on the show today.
Speak both Flemish, which is basically Dutch, and French there. I lived in the Flemish-speaking section.
Okay. I know you didn't learn how to speak Dutch, because that's all the isn't it? What do you think it is about Belgian beer that makes it the best in the world?
It's strong.
Yeah, that's always... That's a good thing.
Girlfriend.
Uh-huh. And how long has this been going on?
About a year and a half.
And it's feeling pretty good?
Yes.
That was very... Yes. Now, did you say that just because you think she'll listen to the show, or did you tell me the truth?
I told you the truth. What I'm not on board with is if I'm in an elevator, there's two guys in the elevator with me. All of us are getting off on the seventh floor. Is some guy... holds the door and makes you go in front of him.
I don't get that. That's a power trip.
It's a power move.
Yeah.
Or like it's what? Why
control
you hold the door for me?
Control what? Issue.
I want, you know, and so I call it man on man chivalry. Mm.
Welcome, Brian.
Thanks, Susan. Glad to be here.
Yeah, me too. I am too. I've known you for many, many years. I'm trying to think how long. I've probably known you since Silicon Alley Reporter. When did you start there?
I started there at in 2000, so right at the end of the dot-com mania. It was already starting to go downward, so it was a good experience to kind of see the industry go through some tough times. I think right now we're in some good times, but it's very instructive to know what went on the first time around.
Yeah, no kidding. And how did you get your job at Silicon Alley Reporter? Did you work for Jason?
I did work for Jason. That's Jason Calacanis, as everyone knows. I had gone to Columbia to journalism school, and I was actually, it's funny how I ended up in the industry. I mostly wanted to stay in New York. I mean, it was very much a lifestyle decision, really, to cover this. And I knew I wanted to cover business. And, you know, at the time, this is, you know, it was a dynamic, interesting area. And so, you know, working for a startup magazine was definitely an interesting experience.
So what did you do? Did you just apply at the Silicon Alley Reporter and get interviewed and get hired, or did you know him?
No, I did not know Jason. I just applied and had a few interviews and... at the time, things were really good for journalists, so I had actually a couple job offers, I remember, but I just decided that there was so much going on the internet that it would be an interesting field to get involved in.
And do you have any crazy Jason stories for us? Like, what's the craziest thing he did that you remember?
I guess the craziest thing, I don't know if it's one single thing.
It was like every day.
it was, the dog. I think Jason, it seems like, at least in the Silicon Alley days, everyone had their little shtick and their thing. And, Jason's thing was the bulldog, Toro. And, in a way, it wasn't totally a shtick because Toro truly was everywhere, for good or for bad. And he did have a habit of leaving gifts around the office.
So he crapped in the office.
Yeah, basically.
And that's disgusting. Do you have a dog now?
I don't. I'm not a big fan of domesticated animals.
Not a big dog. But, well, you're a fan of other humans. We're all domesticated animals, right?
I guess so, in a way.
So it must have been particularly disgusting to have Toro turds littering the office, huh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's unseemly. I understand that. Although, and what's the bulldog personality? I mean, you know them as, fierce, resilient, tenacious. Is it true that that's what they're like?
I don't think so. I always kind of think of them as sort of tragic figures because they've been bred to a point that it isn't practical. They can't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So I always thought, I always thought bulldogs is kind of pathetic.
So in addition to leaving Toro turds, it made you sad.
It did make me sad. I felt bad before. I think, a little diversity in the gene pool might have done him a world of good.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of diversity in the gene pool, what is your, Morrissey's an English name? Is that your background?
It's Irish.
It's Irish. Of course. Yeah. There you go. It's Irish. So are you like a full-blooded Irishman and you have your tartan and all that stuff? I guess that's Scottish, isn't it? What the hell do I know?
I think that's what my parents tell me. Although, yeah. I don't know. I always doubt those things.
Yeah.
I just think, everyone's always ends up being, mixed up with all sorts of different things. But I think that's, I don't know. That seems a little bit more healthy than everyone just interbreeding.
Absolutely. So we've gotten right into interbreeding and dog turds so far on the show today. So let's talk a little bit about your job at Adweek.
Yeah.
You are the senior interactive reporter. You write for both the print and the online version, right?
I do, yes.
And how often do you have to do a story?
Every day. I try to do probably a couple, maybe two, sometimes three online stories a day. And I have a page in the magazine that typically is a single, 1,000-word story. And
okay.
Sometimes, something happens, I'll do another story, maybe, and I'll help out. Like this week I did, one full-page story, and then I also helped out with another story another reporter was working on.
And what was your story this week?
My story this week was about rivals to Google, their marketing strategies for trying to catch up because, Google's built such an enormous brand. It's about how Ask and Microsoft are trying some unconventional approaches to increase their search share at a time when most people just, they Google things. So it's an interesting marketing dilemma.
And so you write for the online, you write for Adweek.com, the print version, and you also blog on AdFreak.
I do, yes.
You're not the only one, though. That's not your specifically your blog. That's kind of the Adweek blog, right?
Yeah. It's something that we can all just, it's kind of fun, as a writer, you can write about things with, a sense of humor and in a tone that, we don't really get to do working for a magazine and a news organization.
Absolutely. It's a lot more fun. As a matter of fact, that's where I read the blog post about Simpsonize Me. And I was all excited. Now, I don't know if you did that post or not. It might have been somebody else. I don't remember. Yeah, it was you because it was you Simpsonized. It was your image, right?
I know what you're talking about, but I couldn't claim credit for it because I didn't write it. But
oh,
I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so I immediately wanted to Simpsonize myself and see if I would come out like Marge or, what
were
I...
Were you able to do it? Because I actually tried and my photo didn't work, so...
The site was down when I went.
Well, that's the biggest problem with, a lot of these, cool, interesting tools is, I then go try to use them, and if they don't work, then who cares?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I wonder what kind of brand experience that is. And that was a Burger King project, so that's actually an interesting example of some stuff that I end up covering. Someone like Crispin Bogusky, they don't actually have the capabilities to do most of these things, so they
outsource.
Farm it out.
Yeah.
And you end up losing some control over, you know, whether the thing actually works.
Yeah, that's always risky, isn't it? And so I pitched you 2 weeks ago on three stories. Look, I got you on my show now. I'm like, you bastard, you didn't cover my shit. So
I linked to a story that I already covered it in the IT newsletter. Does that count?
You linked to it in what?
My other task is there's the IQ newsletter, which is a daily email newsletter everyone should get.
I don't get that.
Oh, Lord.
What is it, babe? Tell me. I want to get it. If you do it, I want it. What is it?
Basically, it's 2 to 3, usually 3, stories about digital advertising and media that either I've written or, someone else here has written. And then I also have a kind of blog-like section where I link to different like blogs and news sources that are also, covering interesting issues because, I realize fully that I can't cover everything. The days of like a reporter or a news organization thinking that they're the only source are, they shouldn't have ever existed, but they're over if they ever did.
Mm-hmm.
So I did link to someone, so I'll forward it to you.
All right, and how do we sign up for your IT newsletter?
IQ newsletter can be signed up for at adweek.com. I don't think it's as obvious as it should be, but
clearly
we're changing our web presence, so that'll change too.
So right now, so what kind of stories do you like to do? Is there any particular thing you're looking for as a journalist in the interactive space? Obviously you want to trump your competitors, you want to get news stories. We understand that. Tell me about exclusives or certain angles that you like or whatever that might be.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the exclusive thing is, I think it's another sort of dying thing, the exclusive, the embargo, things of that sort. Like, I find it kind of a losing proposition to try to play some sort of, like, negotiation game with PR people for some thing. I mean,
but hold embargoes. You want to be pre-brief, so you have time to think about that. I mean, to me, an embargo is more like, okay, don't release this till this day,
those aren't the things I'm really all that interested in. I mean, I'm mostly interested in finding new ways that advertisers are connecting with consumers mm-hmm. through digital channels, and hopefully in non-intrusive ways. So, I don't know, a lot of that, things I write in the magazine are mostly trend stories, and those are the ones I kind of like the most, but that's my preference.
All right. So if we come to you, I know a lot of PR people listen to these shows. They need to come to you with something that isn't just about themselves, but is about a bigger story and links to other things going on in the world.
Yeah, that's the only thing I'm really interested in. I mean, because I understand, like, look, everyone's got different agendas, and PR people want, they get paid in order to get publicity for their client. That's not my interest, and if our interests can coincide, great. But I'm not really interested in giving, certain company publicity. I'm interested in, like, real stories. And I think sometimes that's missing from a lot of PR people.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times they're juggling multiple accounts and they don't completely understand the landscape of the entire, the entire business and the proposition and how it feeds into it. It's, you have to be with a company as a PR person for quite a while to kind of get that big picture and be able to be facile at describing an opportunity like that to a journalist. You've been really talking a little bit about how you think reporting's changed. You can't live in a vacuum. You can't necessarily get exclusives, embargoes, those kinds of things. How has reporting changed for you from Silicon Alley Reporter to DM News to ClickZ to VNU now with Adweek?
You switch jobs and you switch focuses and you switch audiences. Silicon Alley Reporter was very much a startup and I didn't really know what I was doing or anything. So I think, I'm just a better reporter, I hope. I don't know. I think, the audience changes. Adweek audience, Adweek is focused on has been focused on the very traditional advertising industry. And that, that's advantageous and disadvantageous. But I think of it as, a really good opportunity to, take the world that, we know very well, but that really, the rest of the ad industry, which is enormous, is just waking up to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes, within the interactive sphere, it can be kind of myopic. You know, I think that there's so much just focused on, you know, the new thing and like advertising and saying that TV commercial is dead and stuff like this. That I don't know. It doesn't. The larger context is interesting to write for.
So what being at Ad Week has done is really open up your eyes to how massive the traditional industry is, because that's the bulk of your constituency or readership now.
Also, you know, how much the interactive industry can learn from it too. I think, you know, there's
right. Thing, we've been telling them all the things we want them to hear.
The thing that, you know, they don't get it, and like I have much less patience for that kind of stuff nowadays.
What do you think the interactive industry can learn from the traditional world of marketing and advertising? What's the number one thing we don't get?
Well, I think the number one thing is that these brands aren't dumb. Like, they've built these brands over decades, and it wasn't by jumping on the newest thing. It wasn't by going to, you know, TechCrunch or whatever and like saying, wow, widgets are going to be everything and stuff like that. Like,
although you have been covering widgets a lot lately,
no,
I've noticed.
I
like widgets.
Because it's part of a larger shift that, you know, we're seeing, which we can talk about. But I think too many times the interactive industry is too focused on the technology. And that's because it is tech focused. But it's about a lot more than the technology. I think a lot of times the strategy has been, you know, overlooked in it, and how brands get built. And I'm just really learning this because, honestly, the places I've worked before, you end up focusing on the technology and on the implementation.
Absolutely. Well, that's a great time for us to transition. We have to thank my Dishy Mix sponsors. So we're going to take a break. I wanted to let my listeners know that you can actually get text and transcripts of this show on personallifemedia.com. You can also send an email to me at susan@personallifemedia.com. And if you'd like to call and leave a voicemail with comments or questions, it's something we could potentially air on the show. You can do that by calling 206-350-5333. That's 206-350-5333. We're going to take a short break to thank our sponsors. We're with Brian Morrissey of Adweek, and we'll be right back.
Listen to Living Green, Effortless Ecology for Everyday People, a weekly online audio program featuring champions of sustainable living at personallifemedia.com.
We're back, and I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and I have Brian Morrissey. Brian is with Adweek. He's the senior reporter for Interactive, and we were talking before the break about his business and the changes that he's seen in reporting and what it takes to make a good story. What I wanted to do now, Brian, was to move into, I want to go back in time a little bit, and I want to talk about you and speech writing and how you got into that and then made the transition into reporting. So tell us who you wrote speeches for and how you decided, like, Mommy, when I grow up, I want to be a speech writer in Washington.
No,
like,
I didn't.
That doesn't happen, right?
No, it doesn't. I don't think so. I hope it doesn't. I'd gone to grad school for a couple of years, and I kind of came back and didn't know what I was going to do. I think I was really qualified to do anything. So, I don't know, Washington had always interested me, and politics had. So, through a friend, I got an opportunity to work for this group of speechwriters, ex-White House speechwriters. And I started there. I was doing mostly research for speeches, and then slowly, you know, started to do my own writing. Some of it was speeches, but some of it was just writing op-ed pieces. So I would, like, write an op-ed, and then someone else's name would go on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess maybe I did PR. I don't know. Well, I don't know what to call it.
Well, it's all writing, which is clearly what you love to do. You were, you have double master's degrees, right?
I do, I have two.
What are they?
One is in European studies, which is kind of vague. It was basically European politics and economics. And the other is in journalism.
Okay. And for a while, you went to the University of Leuven in Belgium. Is that right?
I did, yeah.
Did I say that right, Leuven?
Leuven,
yeah. Yes. And so did you speak, what is it, Belgic?
Belgish, actually.
Belgish. Did you speak any Belgish?
No, they speak both Flemish, which is basically Dutch, mm-hmm. and French there. I lived in the Flemish-speaking section.
Okay. I know you didn't learn how to speak Dutch, because that's all the isn't it?
It is. It's very guttural. I don't know. I learned, I don't know, a fair amount. It was hard because everyone spoke English.
Yeah.
But I lived there for a couple of years, so I don't know. I was okay.
It's a beautiful place. In what town were you? Is it Leuven?
It's Leuven. It's
and
about
where is that?
20 miles north of Brussels.
Okay. Gorgeous. And Bruges is absolutely one of the most beautiful vacation spots ever, don't you think?
It is. It's
yeah.
very like fairy tale.
Yeah. And canals and everything, so
right.
pretty. What do you think it is about Belgian beer that makes it the best in the world?
It's strong.
Yeah, that's always... that's a good thing!
Well, I think it's just, there's so much of it in a... it's kind of like Silicon Valley in a way. You know, what makes Silicon Valley? You know, there's so many breweries in Belgium that inevitably you're going to have a lot of great beer.
Yeah. And I just love it there. And they've been doing it since, what, like the 1200s, the 11. And you read about these. You have a beer, and they've been making that beer for hundreds and hundreds of years, 1,000 years. So
yeah.
They're probably pretty good at it by now.
I would say so. But I think a lot of them, too, then have ended up probably getting bought by, you know, Interbrew or like a large brewery. So
yeah, a lot of roll-ups.
Yeah.
Do you still drink Belgian beer?
The consolidation has already taken hold in the Belgian beer industry.
Yeah.
I mean, I do. You know, Stella is so popular here now.
Yeah.
I mean, they actually make that in Leuven.
Okay. Now, how do you balance beer drinking with running ultra marathons? What is an ultra marathon?
An ultra is anything longer than 26 miles. So it can be anything. I've only gone a 50K, so that's 31 miles. But, you know, they go upwards to 100 miles or more. I've never done that. There's a race actually on Monday that goes through Death Valley that's 135 miles.
What's that one called?
The Badwater.
Wow. And you do you live in Manhattan?
I do. I live on the Upper West Side.
So how do you run in Manhattan? Because you have to stop at every light.
Well, I don't run on the streets. We are one of the good things Robert Moses did, and he did many bad things, was he made sure that we had parks. So I run in Central Park, and I also run next to Riverside Park, which goes along the Hudson River. I even run home from work sometimes.
And how long does it take? How many miles is it running to and from work?
It's about 6.5.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, not
six
bad.
Six and a half miles. And how frequently do you do these marathons?
I only do about, nowadays, like 2 per year.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything more than that, I'm kind of looking to get injured or just not feel good.
It's a lot of running. And I'm thinking you're kind of in your early to mid-30s. How old are you? I don't know.
I'm 34.
34, yeah, that's about right. So are you noticing any changes, or you feel like you're still in your massive prime around marathons?
I don't think I am anymore. I thought I would continue to, but I don't think I am anymore. I don't know. I think it takes longer to recover.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get busier at work and it gets harder.
Now, I don't know if you're single, married. What's your relationship status?
I'm unmarried.
Okay.
Yeah. But I have a girlfriend.
Aha. Uh-huh. And how long has this been going on?
About a year and a half.
And it's feeling pretty good?
Yes.
That was very, yes. Now, did you say that just because you think she'll listen to the show, or did you tell me the truth?
I told you the truth.
I love it. Well, that's great. How exciting for you. I'm pleased. Now, there's some weird things you told me about yourself. First of all, one is that you eat a lot of bananas. Is it for the potassium for the running, or what? Are you just like monkey boy freak? What is it?
Well, no, I would say it's for the running. I think a lot of runners eat a lot of bananas, but I like to have like 3 a day.
Okay, that is a lot, and you don't have to. Clearly, you're not worried about your weight.
And they're very handy. You know, someone at his keyboard all day. Other fruit, you know, you get all over your hands, but bananas come. You know, they have a sheath, and you don't get your hands all messy, and you can put it to the side and type. And it's a handy fruit.
The packaging's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good packaging.
I have one right now.
Wait till the show's over to eat it. So another quirky thing about you, there are a couple little quirky things about you, and I'm sure there's a lot more. These are just the ones you were willing to give up to me. One is that you have acrophobia.
Acrophobia?
Yeah, you're afraid.
Oh, okay.
You're afraid of heights.
Yeah, I don't even have my vocabulary.
How'd you get that? Were you born afraid of heights?
I mean, it's not like extreme. I just wouldn't like want to be like on a fire escape, for example.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't feel comfortable with that. But it's not like I wouldn't go like on like a roof deck or something.
So it's not a hugely limiting thing for you?
No, mm-hmm. It doesn't affect me. I probably am not even technically scared of heights. Maybe I just don't. I prefer not to be. I don't know, in precarious situations.
This is going to take some deep therapy, I think. here's the other freaky thing about you. You told me that this is insane, Morrissey. Insane. Babe, you got to fix this.
What's that?
You've used the same broken alarm clock for nearly 10 years. You have to turn it on and off with a pen?
Yes.
Okay, that's strange. Tell me why this goes on.
I have a red pen next to. I think, you know, despite all the running, I think at the end of the day I'm probably pretty lazy. So I just haven't bought a new one, and I've just gotten used to it. And I don't know. I think I kind of it. Actually, it's kind of difficult to do because you have to like get the tip of the pen in there, and so it's not an easy thing to do first thing in the morning. So maybe I like the challenge.
You know, I've always been really intrigued by those. Like sound sensation alarm clocks. Those ones where when it wakes you up to some, you know, like the ocean surf or birds in the Amazon rainforest. Have you heard about those clocks?
Are those the ones that they do it like periodically? Like they start with a certain thing? I don't know. Like I know that there's ones at like Brookstone.
They're Brookstone-y,
like $400 and they'll like start with like just emitting a low noise. So because I guess like it's not good just to all of a sudden wake up like a bolt.
Yeah. I like a hug when I wake up.
Okay. I'm in a relationship.
You can get a hug. Oh yeah, I wasn't asking for you. I'm in a relationship. I'm with my husband. So I got a built-in hug man. Speaking of that, what is this thing about man-on-man chivalry?
Oh, well, I think as anyone who's worked in an office knows it. Although they probably haven't recognized it. Something that's driving me nuts. It's okay if you're in an elevator. I think, like, if you're in an elevator, I try to be, you know, polite. I will, you know, let a woman get off before me, and I think that's polite and everything.
I like that. I want to make as much money or more as any man. I want to have all my descent, but I like the. It's just a sweet thing.
It's a nice thing to do, and I'm totally on board with it. What I'm not on board with is if I'm in an elevator. There's two guys in the elevator with me. All of us are getting off on the 7th floor. Is some guy holds the door and makes you go in front of him.
I don't get that. That's a power trip.
It's a power move.
Yeah.
Or like
it's
what? Why
control
hold the door for me?
Control issue.
I want, you know, and so I call it man on man chivalry.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a surprising number of instances where it happens.
Are you going to do anything about it?
Well, I do.
What do you do?
I tell him to get off the elevator.
Get off the elevator. You're not holding the door for me.
Exactly. I want the doors to open and, like, all three guys to go trying to get off first. I think that's the way it should be.
Every man for themselves, get the hell off the elevator.
Absolutely.
I hear you. Now, here's another cranky thing about you. You don't volunteer.
I don't.
Tell me why.
I feel bad about that. I probably shouldn't have shared that.
That's okay. Hardly anybody does. I really don't think you should feel alone in this.
I don't know what it is. I've wanted to. I I did during college, and then it didn't work out so well. And I tutored a kid briefly during Columbia, but I was supposed to tutor him, but we ended up playing kickball a lot, and then he didn't do well in his grades, and his mom blamed me, and I don't know, so maybe that kind of scared me off.
So you've had a volunteering incident.
I guess so.
Yeah. Well, I can see that. I really can see that.
Do you volunteer?
I do, a little bit here and there. One of the things that I like to do, so I think you have to find the right kind of volunteering. Here's what I do. Every year, I adopt one or two families from a very poor area just outside of the Silicon Valley. It's like South San Jose. I adopt one or two families, and then I ask any of my friends, I find out what these families need. These are families with children, usually quite a few children. And I find out what they're missing. Sometimes they don't have beds; they're on blow up mattresses, or they don't have sheets, or they need rolling suitcases because they get ferried around from place to place because their parents are in jail, or I've all kinds of stories. They've never had a bicycle, whatever. And so I just assess these families and I find out what they need. I talk to the parents or the grandparents or the caretakers or whoever it is, and then I come back to my daughter and the other mothers of my daughter's in my daughter's school, for her school peers, and I ask them to donate anything that they feel like they can. Like, I make a list. I make it really easy. Here's a list of things this family needs. What would you like to contribute if you'd like to contribute? And a lot of people say, hey, I do something else. I'm not interested. And a lot of people say, thank you for making this easy for me. Then I take all the goodies. My daughter and I wrap them, and or she'll have friends over and we'll all wrap them together. And then I take my daughter with some of her friends and we go deliver the gifts and we go to the house and we meet the children and we take pictures of them. And then I share those photos back. And I feel like that firsthand opportunity for my daughter and all her friends to see how another family lives is hugely impactful. And she's gotten her hands dirty. Like last year, I gave them the money and they went to Target with the list and they had to figure out, with this much money, here are all the things they need. What are we going to get them? How many things can we accomplish? And then they brought them all home and wrapped them. And that felt fabulous for me. And I think it's, in over the years, I think it makes a pretty dramatic impact for my daughter. So in that way, volunteering's been good for me, but it took me a long time to find that niche for myself and something that I could really do and do well. So I think
well,
it's just
I'm
time.
Still
You're so exact, and it will come to you. Like
maybe
I felt,
Achilles. I've thought about being one of the people. Have you ever seen during marathons the people that run with the blind people?
Oh wow! No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, they basically get like tethered to a blind runner.
Yeah.
And so they kind of guide them through. But I don't know how it works with training. I mean, that would be very interesting.
Yeah, that would be an amazing, amazing experience. Can you imagine how good you'd feel running alongside someone who was competing in a marathon who was blind? That would be so inspiring, and you would feel so good about yourself.
But I wonder if you have to train with them like all the time.
I don't know.
You really get to know the person.
Yeah, you would. You better pick a good one, right? Although most people are...
I'd want to, like, interview them.
Yeah, exactly. Most people are beautiful inside once you unveil them, right? Just like today, this is what we do on Dishy Mix, right? It's neat to know about you. You've got a girlfriend you're totally jazzed about. You run marathons. You're a banana eater. You've got a freaky alarm clock situation going on. I mean, who knew? As a matter of fact, when I was trying to... dig up stuff about you on the internet and do my research, there's nothing. Like, I can't even find a bio on you, dude. Like, there's nothing.
What do you mean?
Well, I can't find anything. Like, where is all there's stuff about you? You're a bit of an enigma.
Am I?
Yeah. Well, no longer, because, of course, now we've revealed the Brian Morrissey. But yeah, it was actually pretty
difficult.
What
were you looking for?
Oh, I was looking for your bio. I was looking for whatever. I read some old stories that you wrote and things like that, but there isn't much about you. You don't have a Flickr site. You don't have a personal blog. I mean, there's no real...
I do have a personal blog.
What is it?
It's the Internal Pig Dog. It's about running.
Internal what dog?
Internal Pig Dog.
P-I-G?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a running blog.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, see, I didn't find that at all. And what about...
You weren't searching for internal pig dog, I guess.
Yeah, that one didn't come up with me. Well, we'll have to check that out and we'll get to know you more. So we're out of time for today. I really have had a lot of fun with you, Brian. It's nice to spend some time getting to know you better. And I just want to reiterate for those listeners who are interested that you can call with comments or email with comments, Susan@personallifemedia.com. And you can call at 206-350-5333. Brian's show will have text and transcripts on personallifemedia.com as well, so you can remember all these fabulous things about him. And now you won't be so unknown on the web, Brian, because this will be up, right?
Optimized for search.
Exactly. So, and we'll also point to the Pig Dog blog. So if you're interested in connecting and you're listening and you're, you know, running right now, for example, it'll all be there. So, Brian, thank you so much for coming on Dishy Mix today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was fun. It was my pleasure. I really enjoyed it. You're a great sport. And we'll have you back in a little while and see what's been going on with you. So for you listeners who have tuned in today, thank you so much for spending the time with us. We appreciate it, and we wish you a great day. This is your host, Susan Bratton. Take care.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.